and that was going to be around my wake-up time to start preparing for Sunday school, so I missed a little bit of my prep time, but they are getting a dog in the Strasburg area, and they just happened to be passing through. And I was trying to talk her into stopping here at church. She might, so if my phone gets a text message and I check it, that's why. She told me she would text and let us know if they were going to stop. So if you know Mims, you know we haven't seen her in a while, so it'd be nice to play face with them. And if not, this is just a friend of ours from CFO camp that we've known for years. Anyway, just to kind of, I guess, recap for everybody, where we left off last week, we introduced, because remember with the diagram that you have. With the diagram that we have, for those who aren't here, we finished the first circle, the foundational values, where we talked about the pieces of faith, character, and service, how those kind of form the foundational values in us. And now we've moved into the unique design. And we just started that last week. We talked in general just about kind of the uniqueness that God's put in each of us. And then we're going to just move through strengths, passions, and experiences. And that's where we left off. Now, the discussion we were having is one thing that Dr. Miller talks about quite a bit, get this pulled up, is how in our culture, in our society, we spend a lot of time trying to neutralize our weaknesses. And we spend a lot of time trying to, you know, we kind of look at the areas that we might feel are glaring and weak points, and we put a lot of effort into trying to make them not quite so weak. And he was saying that we oftentimes do that to the neglect of really focusing on our strengths rather and building up those strengths, because those might be the areas that God's really intentionally made us strong for the purpose of what he's called us to. So let me actually find the one slide here as a review. Those who were here last week, you'll remember this slide, but hopefully you can see. We have here on the left, you have declining and then thriving. And what he was saying is if you just focus on your weaknesses and strengths, and if you're just focusing on trying to minimize your weaknesses, it just kind of lands you in this place of surviving. What he describes as mediocrity, if that's really what your point of emphasis is. But rather, it doesn't necessarily move you into a place of thriving. Whereas, as it says here, when we move from okay to great, we go beyond mediocrity and we follow our strengths to thriving. So as we enter into the strengths portion, that's kind of one of the main thoughts that he has behind it, is to really spend more time focusing on what we feel might be strengths. And the discussion we were having then, let me see if I can find this slide, and he gave the verse. I'm not sure where it is. Oh, here it is. He then quoted this verse and he said, 2 Corinthians 12:9. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me." That's 2 Corinthians. And so we're talking about how there's still, though, this balance, because Scripture is very clear on the fact that oftentimes from our place of weakness, God's strength, steps in. And I've always, you hear it said, when God's the one doing it in our, areas of weakness, we know it can't do that. So the discussion we were just starting to have at the end of last week was how do we balance this idea of kind of focusing on strengths, but also acknowledging the fact that God often uses us out of our weakness. And that's kind of where we left off. So we can jump right back into that, or if we feel like we've exhausted that conversation. I remember Timothy made a comment about how, when you look at somebody like Moses, or you look at some of the people that God used, who were seemingly taken and used from a place of weakness. I think of somebody like Gideon, who, he was least in his family. His tribe was the, the least, or his family was the least in the tribe. But yet God called him a mighty warrior. And he kind of called that out of him as he then charged him with taking on the Midianites and Judges. And we see that. And so what Timothy was saying was a lot of times our strengths are right there, kind of side to side with our weaknesses sometimes. And what we think or perceive those weaknesses, perhaps they actually are strengths that through God's empowerment we can kind of take off from that. So anyway, were there any follow-up thoughts that people had on that discussion? We don't have to stay here too long. We can move on to the other stuff. Yeah.
Totally focus on our strengths, because then it's me doing it and not God. Right. So there's got to be some kind of balance in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because humility always has to be, I think, at the foundation. Any other thoughts on that?
I always have thoughts.
Go ahead.
Sorry. But I hope anyone else is willing to speak, would like to speak. Anybody else have a thought? Then Joyce will need to say, let other people talk. Because I always talk. But I was just thinking, Amory, strengths, I usually think of strengths, so I'll speak for myself. I think of strengths as gifts that I have that I can exercise. But how could we understand that humility to be a strength? And how is being willing to recognize our weaknesses and deal with them also a strength? You know, I'm seeing some overlap here.
Yeah.
Is that something that this guy kind of takes into consideration, or am I off the wall?
Maybe we should be more like the chariots of God. Chariots of fire guy. God may be best, you know.
Yeah. Well, I agree that strengths are kind of adding to the gifts we have and abilities, you know, and you're going there. But what about, it seems to me like humbly dealing with weaknesses is also a strength. I think somebody who's willing to admit their limitations is really a strong person, as opposed to being in denial and beating their head against the wall, trying to be something they're not, or trying to feel like they can lick this on their own. I don't know. I just think there's an overlap there, maybe.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, and I think humility is a part of that, and also security. I think being able to kind of recognize and be secure in how God's created you, and not, you know, and if maybe this isn't an area of strength, being able to say that is also, you know, being secure in the fact that I'm okay with that. Yeah.
Could it be that Dr. Miller is saying, let what is driving you be the strength, not the weaknesses? You know, it's like last week I used the analogy that Mark using this, I think the first time I heard it was like with his high school kids and Mary and him with high school kids, talking about a weakness, and he put a chair in the center of the room and he'd walk around and say, I'm not going to think about, you know, that. I'm not going to think about my sin. I'm not going to think about my sin. And he was using it in the context of, like, going through the process of sanctification and growing up in God and letting behind the sins that entangle us. And when you end up just focusing on that all the time, that ends up being, you don't get past it then. So I think that what everybody is saying is true. Yes, we can't just focus on our strengths so much that it becomes a prideful, self-promoting thing. We also cannot be looking at our weaknesses and letting that dictate to us what doors we walk through and what doors we don't walk through. And also, if you look on page 2, I remember when you guys first started this, Dr. Miller writes here, the sense of purpose is like a GPS system in our lives, guiding us in the best direction. It's discernible, it's logical, and yet at the same time, it is mystical and inexplicable. It is simple, and yet it's complex. And I feel like when you're talking about weaknesses and strength, it's just like there's no like clean cut, yeah, the yin and the yang. But there's no clean cut thing that yeah, I think it's more of just like a focus maybe of not just focusing on these weaknesses, because if that's all you focus on, which is how our culture kind of problem solves, take care of all your problems and then things will be fine, you know, it's kind of a self-defeating, you're not looking at what God has given you. Does that make sense?
No, that makes perfect sense. Dad, does that make, Dad, does that connect back with what you were saying?
Yeah, I think it does. And I was thinking of an example, and it may not be exactly what I was saying, but I have a lot of pride about knowing how to get from point A to point B. Like, I think I have maps in my mind, and I know the best way, and all that. So it's been humbling for me to recognize that the GPSs we have today are actually scientifically calculating the shortest distance between A and B. And so recently, I think I've been able to say, you know, maybe the GPS knows a better way to get there than I do. And that's been humbling, to have to surrender to a machine.
I was thinking of a contrary thought and an example of scripture. And I don't know if this correlates to this, but in great pride and strength, Nebuchadnezzar walked out and said, look at this kingdom that I have built. And God gave him a place for the cows, you know. I don't know if that associates with this, but I, you know, the other side of the coin where we look at what we've done and eliminate God from the picture, he humbles us and brings us to the point of knowing how great is our need for him. I think that's the truth of this verse and saying for things too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of
like what Matt was saying. The starting point is that all strengths that we may have from God. And if we ever move off of that, we miss the point, and we're in some shaky ground for sure. And I think we also just recognize that even areas that we think we're weak in, God may make us strong in. And that's an exciting and sometimes frightening reality that we live in, that we live with. But there's no mistaking the pattern in Scripture where God has pointed his finger to somebody who did not feel adequate for the job, who did not feel, and on paper, they weren't, and so God certainly has a habit of doing that, and I don't think that necessarily has contrast with this idea of, kind of shoring up the, or focusing more on the strengths in our lives than the points of weakness, but that doesn't mean that God can't come in at any point in time and say, you think you're weak here, I'll make you strong here.
A little bad in my head yet, but when if there was such a thing as a person who could do everything was a strength and there was no weakness, then he wouldn't need anybody else. He made us that way so that we can rely on other people to prop up our weaknesses, and that we can prop up theirs with our strengths. If we didn't recognize that, then and recognize that we have weaknesses for that person, can do it all, and I don't need anybody else. I don't need God. I don't need people. I can do it all by myself. That is very, very unhealthy. It's a very unhealthy way of thinking. Even for a person who doesn't believe in God, it's a very unhealthy way of thinking. So I think that if we don't worry about strengths and weaknesses, we do what we're told to do. God will prop us up with people that can help us with things that we're not so great at, like he did with Moses.
Yeah, Moses was helped with another person.
Right.
Jeremiah was given the abilities he didn't have.
Right. So he's going to prop us up no matter what when he wants us to do something. And if we realize that, we don't have to worry about strengths and weaknesses. We just do what God tells us to do and just go do it.
Mark, did you want to say something?
I was looking more at the verse there in 2 Corinthians. Mm-hmm. And so right after that, because when I am weak, then I'm strong. And so it struck me that he actually wrote about his circumstances of suffering in carrying out his ministry, his calling. And one thing they closed, we were last weekend in our debrief down in North Carolina. I'm very grateful for that time. And the one facilitator closed our time with a quote from some gentleman just about how the Lord does not call us to things we can do, but to think he calls us in such a way that it requires him. So whatever it is that we're doing, however we're living, it has to require him and his provision and his presence. And so just thinking how Paul wasn't listing personal attributes as weaknesses. He was listing the weaknesses of suffering in fallen God, fallen world. And if you go back to the beginning of 12, he's referring in the third person, this person is caught up in this vision of heaven. So when you think of that tension, I think for all of us, we're living in that tension of having this vision of our hope and the reality of what's around us. And living in the tension of brokenness, yet glorious resurrection hope. And so when Paul confronts that, he talks about this thorn, and then he unpacks things further to talk about his suffering. But then the next paragraph, beginning in verse 11, is how this is driving him because he has been chosen for them. And so his whole focus then is on them. So I think the broader framework helps with all the individual application, which is good. What everyone's sharing is very good. But keeping that in mind with that bigger picture of the weakness of suffering for the sake of others, for the sake of the glorious vision that we have. Because if we don't have that vision, we don't realize how broken things are. So things can start to look pretty good here on earth sometimes. If we don't have that resurrection vision compelling us. So anyway, just kind of, I was struck by that looking at this, that he was kind of lifted out of his, because he does talk about his individual strengths and weaknesses at other places as well. But just kind of the big picture for all of this is that part of our weaknesses are the sufferings that others are experiencing and our call to serve them in the midst of that. And we're going to face all sorts. Look, if we have that vision and we're really going to follow him, we're going to face all sorts of things that assault us in that. And in that, I think what you're saying too is not to focus on the sufferings or the weaknesses, but to boast in the grace that makes the victory possible to overcome all of that. So I could tell you so many stories of people. I mean, I don't know if you remember one Sunday school I was here, I shared about that lady Maggie, whose husband Jake died very suddenly. Within 1 week, they were over serving in Indonesia. They came back here. He contracted a blood disease, or he contracted some type of infection. It connected with a hereditary blood disease that they didn't realize he had. Within 1 week, he had died. And he was as healthy as anybody in this room. And complete shock. Well, she came to this training last week. And so we got to cry with her and hope with her. So there is incredible weakness that has just, I mean, in the whole Muslim world where they're working, he was her ticket. I mean, without him, that's how she had acceptance. That's how she could go into certain areas because it was so male-dominated. And now she's feeling like she needs to go back, but how? And so there's a lot of weakness that she can boast in, but she just kept, throughout the week, through tears, coming back to, and I'm using these words, but Christ's power that was resting on her and being triumphant over her weakness. continue then, as Paul does in verses 11 and forward, to serve and live for the sake of others.
Yeah, and that's kind of what Matt was saying. I'm thinking, you know, I think it's good if we think about our own life, and that's what I usually try to do. And I love that passage and that whole concept. I think sometimes I'm strongest when it's my weakness being overcome by God. And then I know for sure it's God, and not because I have some natural ability. So if I'm doing something that's one of my, quote, strengths, I might tend to say, oh, well, that's one of my strengths. But if I do something that overcomes a weakness because God does it, then I say, whoa, that was God. You know, then I know it wasn't I.
Well, I think kind of what Mark was over the text there. We also have to kind of almost define weakness. Are we going to define it according to a biblical framework, or and more of what our culture might describe as weakness? Because I think in some ways what he's talking about here is more kind of what culturally might be defined as weaknesses. Whereas if he were here for this discussion, I think he'd be very excited about the thought of weakness as being linked with suffering and things like that. So,
but not to lose his point, he's saying we shouldn't strive to overcome our weaknesses.
Right.
We should aim to strengthen our gifts.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I think it would make a wonderful book.
Sure. Just to kind of, I think we touched on this a little bit last week, but these are the 5 areas of strength that we'll be looking at. So you've got physical and intellectual, and he makes the argument, and we'll come back to this, I think, we'll have time today, but that in our culture, the emphasis is very much so placed on physical and intellectual strength, that tends to be what gets highlighted the most. But then he talks about emotional, spiritual, and psychological strength. And so, Dad, even some of the things you were describing, having the humility to acknowledge, like, I think some of those, like you described as strengths, definitely fall into some of these, kind of the upper 3 categories here. But let me just kind of further show you how he breaks this down. You can see he has, obviously physical, you're talking body, intellectual, you're talking mind. He likens the emotional strength to strengths with heart, spiritual with obviously spirit, and psychological with this idea of soul. So these would be the strength domains. He says, let's see here. This might come up in a later slide, so I don't want to jump ahead, but your life calling will be impacted by all 5 domains. You can never just say, well, this is my only area of strength and it only falls in this category. But rather, all of us are impacted by all 5 domains. It's a holistic approach. So strength in your life that, he's kind of defining each one here. So strength in your life that gives your body distinct features and enables you to perform actions with your body. Okay, that's how he defines physical. Another way he puts it in here, the capacity, or no, that's the same. So that would be the physical one. That's, I think, a little easier to understand. The intellectual strength in your life that enables you to acquire knowledge and develop an ever-expanding understanding of this knowledge in a manner that produces wisdom. Okay, so that's the definition for intellectual strength. If anybody wants to stop on any of these, just wave your hand at me or start talking. Emotional strength in your life that enables you to correctly experience and employ feelings and sensibility. I remember my students had a hard time kind of wrapping their head around some of these, the top 3 here. Any thoughts on that with emotional? Enables you to correctly experience and employ feelings and sensibility.
Some people call it emotional intelligence. That's exactly where this goes.
Yeah.
He uses emotional intelligence.
Yeah, I was going to say, does anybody want to take a shot at another, trying to redefine it, kind of?
No. Ask the question. Who's to say if you are correctly experiencing healing? The way you phrase that, it's like there's a right and wrong way to experience something.
Well, he uses emotional intelligence as the vehicle that he uses to explore this, because each of these then are going to be their own session.
Right.
So we'll go through each of these in greater depth, so we don't have to get it all now. But emotional intelligence, if I remember, broadly speaking, includes things like identifying emotions correctly, which is, you do that right or wrong. I mean, you get it or you don't. You can look at someone and say, I think you're angry, and they say, well, no, I'm sad. Oh, I didn't do that correctly. So identifying and then interpreting and using, regulating is the big one. And I think that's one of the distinguishing factor, one of the key factors in emotional intelligence, is do we know which emotions are appropriate for the time, that place, and the situation, which ones are, inappropriate, or which is the appropriate way to use an emotion, which is inappropriate way to use an emotion, unhelpful, unproductive, that kind of thing. So these are like 30,000 feet snapshots, and then we're going to go down and really, like with my students, when they're at this point, they see a lot of gray. They're like, these three sound very similar, Mr. Cody, and then we go through it, and they're like, I see how that was different. So it's going to be helpful as we go kind of down into the trenches with some of these things.
Yeah, that is true.
Mary, you said right or wrong.
No, I'm saying so it's not as much a right or wrong thing. It's like a
sure.
Inappropriate or fearful.
So feelings aren't incorrect. They are what they are, but how you use them, I guess.
Yeah.
One of the axioms I use in a lot of counseling is don't make major decisions on the basis of authority. Mm-hmm. Do it on the basis of faith and knowledge, scripture, and objective. I think emotions can be great. Without them, life would be pretty dull. But we need to be careful, I think. It's that second word, not the experience of it, but employing feelings.
Uh-huh.
How do we employ our
feelings? Yeah. It's funny to do this with high schoolers, particularly if you have an open group who's willing to talk. And I mean, when I was teaching my section, the students I had for a number of years, and they all knew each other well. And, you know, you get to some of these, they're like, I do not have emotional intelligence. So, like, my emotions are crazy. Like, I'm all over the place. Or, you know, boys are like, well, what does it mean if I never cry? Does that mean I have no emotional intelligence? Like, just the conversations you have are pretty funny. But, and like Timothy said, as we kind of look at each one specifically, we'll get into maybe some of those conversations. But I guess for now, we'll keep flying at 30,000 feet. So that would be his definition for emotional, psychological strength in your life that enables you to exercise your will to decide upon courses of action for your life. And again, that I know some of my students got hung up on this idea of exercising your will. Like, that seemed like a too strong of a way of saying it. And did anybody maybe feel that way at all when they first heard it? So we could explore that now, or we could kind of wait, table that until we get to that category. But that's how it's defined here, to decide upon courses of action for your life. And then spiritual, strength in your life that enables you to discern and respond in service to the mysterious inner leading of God.
In the teaching this course at the school, we just finished the unit on spiritual strengths, and I appreciate that Dr. Miller puts that last, because I think you're going to see some of the wrestling that we have on the front end of this, like how do we balance weaknesses with strengths and being humble and not becoming arrogant, striving, being versus doing, all that kind of stuff. The spiritual piece is so significant. And I think I said this kind of thing like last week, but you look at a guy like Moses, he did not want to go talk to Pharaoh. Was he insecure? Was he self-deprecating? Like, you know, oh, I'm not good enough to do this. Not me. You got the wrong guy. Whatever the case, he thought low of himself. He thought that he was too low for this job. God took him and used him, and really, Moses' thinking low of himself, when that was animated by the Spirit in him, that is what kept him humble. So his humility made him uniquely qualified to serve the calling that God had on his life, which was to be the mediator, the single mediator between God and his people. Yes, Aaron was there, but they both messed up at different times, which is a good reminder, of course. But that Spirit, the presence of the Spirit in our lives, is what I think draws together all these pieces of weakness and brokenness. And even a guy like, you think of Joseph, when he was younger, he was confident, but he was an arrogant punk. So his brothers wanted to kill him. But that confidence and competence and ability led him to places, enabled by the wisdom and Spirit of God, to be second in command of all of Egypt. And then you think of guys like Daniel and others, you know, Esther with her physical beauty, right? Like, they had those strengths, but when you couple them with the Holy Spirit, it just goes, like, boom, and it's exponential what God can do. And again, like I said last week, I think very close with those strengths are the flip side, like weakness, right? So it's a very fine line between being confident in your mental abilities and being educated and being downright arrogant, right? And we see that with Joseph, right? And other people, so...
Timothy just named all these individuals, but all of their calling had everything to do with the whole community.
Yeah.
And their weaknesses, some of it was their own doing, some of it was, I mean, Moses was in exile, but he's in exile because he murdered a guy, he lost his cool. But that became a major weakness then, but his lack of confidence and all those things, but also the weakness that he didn't have the position. Okay, so he wasn't an equal with Pharaoh. Joseph was in prison. I mean, that's a major weakness that he had overcome.
He was exiled from his family.
Yeah, he was. And Isaiah, when he gets the call in that heavenly vision, he has the thorn in his flesh right away that I live among the people of unclean lips. And yeah, I'm one of them as well. So
Daniel was in Babylon.
You kind of see this. What that Romans 12 thing is that weaknesses, there's this connection to personal characteristics, but it's all set in this bigger panoramic of the brokenness of the world and the sufferings we experience. If this was written by Paul and in Spanish, and you read strength in your life, so me included, my first reading of that is strength in Mark's life. That enables me to discern and respond in service to the mysterious inner leading of God. It seems like 80% of what I'm reading in the New Testament, I'm pulling a number out of the air, but you think of where Paul says, Christ in you, the hope of glory. I read that my whole life as Christ in Mark, the hope of glory. But it's you plural in Spanish. So it's Christ in Mark and Phil and Abenazer and Madge and Joel. That's the hope of glory. It's Christ and Mark and Mike and Tom. That's the hope. So I think something that is turning my life upside down, and our culture is so much aching for this. If we can just continue to first hear this as strength in Zion's life, or strength in our life that enables us to discern and respond in service. That's all. Then Mike's weaknesses are my weaknesses. So the grace that Mike needs to receive might be me. The grace that I need to receive might be Mike helping me overcome the suffering I'm going. You see what I mean? It just pulls us out of the individual trappings first, because our whole culture is really struggling with that individualism on all fronts. And we're really being crushed by it, when really the grace is. So even when we look at something like strength and calling, to look around this room and look around our lives and see God's grace in the relationship. sorts of circumstances, all sorts of struggles. If people wanted to, they listed people that had really become a part of the grief and loss and suffering cycle in their life and all that stuff. And then at the very end, they took us through this exercise, how they did it with this, these papers and stuff like that. But you had all these, things listed, and you rip off this one page and turn them around and you see the image of Christ. And just seeing how God uses all of these weaknesses to conform us to the image of Christ. And it was a really, meaningful, that we give thanks for all of our circumstances. And not even get caught up with, you know, isn't it interesting that Paul talks about this thorn as, you know, God's grace being there, but he calls it a messenger of Satan too. So we don't even need to get caught up in, is it from God? Is it from Satan? Is it, well, let's just thank God for the circumstances and how he's using them to refine our calling and our understanding in all of these domains.
And in the thought of community, like you're talking about, Mark, in the Spirit of Christ, he gives us his eyes to see the hurts that others are enduring and suffering with them. And not so much view our trials and be able to rejoice in them trials and celebrate with other people as they go through their trials and you can go through them with them. It's so cool to interact with community in this and this, not just focus on self, you know, in every circumstance in life and family and church family and neighborhoods and our work. We are part of the community and to, you know, to suffer with people that thought of compassion that we did in that one series that we had, you know, suffering with people, to have that compassion about Christ for the other people and not to fear your own sufferings, you know, to suffer with others and build you. And that might be a strengthening also as God uses that in our lives.
The area of discernment, isn't that word up there?
Yeah.
You know, I basically am a flop, and I'm using I, not individual. I hope others identify with this. But I think we discern corporately. I usually hear God when I'm conferring with other people and exploring something, and somehow I usually I don't even feel confident when I have a leading. I check it out with something else. And that's how I confirm it. So I think discernment is corporate.
Well, and the, you know, the reality is, I'm guessing you don't just check that out with anybody who has.
Right.
You would check it out with people that you think of as discerning individuals. And so I completely agree, 100%. And I think what we're looking at kind of pieces of this much larger thing that he's, you know, going through here. And if we ever get too zoomed in on one, it can start to look a little too individualistic, a little too like, well, you know, this really needs to play out in service. But if you look at it in the entirety of the model and what he's saying, I think Dr. Millard would be saying yes and amen to everything that he's hearing here, because it all, you know, when we go start to finish with this, you'll see, you know, from foundational values, where it's a huge, you know, talking about how service is so significant there. And, you know, one thing he says is how life calling apart from service is impossible. You cannot truly experience a sense of life calling apart from community and service. And, you know, I had a student complaining this week about, why do we have to do service projects during school? Like, we shouldn't have to do that. I was like, really? And they're like, well, yeah. They're like, you know, this whole idea of figuring out our calling, you know, what does service have to do with that? And it just like opened the door to a huge conversation. And I was like, well, let's talk about that. And, you know, there is kind of this mindset that the two don't go hand in hand, where that's just so far from everything that he says here. So I'm trying to think of a good way to kind of wrap this part up, but.
Just one other prescriptive thing, fitting in with what we've been saying. As we've considered governance of the church, scripturally, the word elder is never singular, except when Peter says to the fellow elders as an elder. He's referring to himself clearly, but in the context of to the rest of the elders. Elder is a plural concept. So there are churches that are governed by one elder, and it's out of order. You know, that's what I was referring to. That's a biblical foundation, I think,
sure,
for that. And there comes the discernment in the government where you're not, where you don't have just one person. It's a give and take.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Well, and what I was kind of coming back to is to, as we have these ongoing discussions, as we do, I mean, there's some worksheets we're going to do where we are looking inward and we're saying, okay, is this an area that God has really maybe put a strength in me, or something that I really feel passionate about, some experiences that perhaps have given me some wisdom to speak to situations like these? You know, we can do that through humility, and we can do that in community. But we are going to do that for the strengths portion. I think it's kind of fun. I think it's an enjoyable thing. Sometimes you start to see in yourself things that you just were like, oh my word, like, I do really enjoy that. That really gets me going. That's something that I'm passionate about. I didn't even realize that, or I didn't even realize that could be a strength. I just thought that was a random thing that I liked, you know. So this portion will be a little bit more kind of taking a step back, looking and seeing like, okay, you know what, I think maybe God gives me a little bit of discernment, and that's okay. Like, that's exciting. And then where this is all going to end and lead is going to connect a lot to what we've heard from Mark and others here today, is in personal mission. Because God doesn't just give us these things for us to pat ourselves on the back. God doesn't strengthen us in ways for us to feel good about ourselves. It's for the purpose of mission and being outward with that. And so once we take this start to finish, you'll kind of see how it all will connect together in that way. Would you add some thoughts to that?
I would just say, if I could summarize the best way to approach this strengths, all of these things, this entire strengths part, it's to remember this very simple, you know, principle that you've heard probably many times. To whom much is given, much is required. And God blesses us, yes, and gifts people in many different ways, each of us uniquely. But it is for the purpose of others and for the purpose of his kingdom. And not to jump way ahead, but in the conclusion summary, in the very back of your packet, you don't need to turn there. But he says, Dr. Miller says, we've talked all about life calling and how we can, you know, discern it in our lives. He said there are four things that you must overcome. And this is very cultural, I think. But he says four things we must overcome. It has to overcome our commitment to this. Must overcome the selfishness of indifference. And he says the comfort of complacency. Third, the fear of failure. And then fourth, the avoidance of pain. He says if we don't, like, basically come to God and, like Mark was saying, in brokenness because of those things, that this life includes pain and it's not going to be comfortable all the time, then that is when these things are unleashed, and that is when life calling is unleashed. So it really is, and that's why I am so enthusiastic about this curriculum, because Dr. Miller always holds that at the center of this, and it's a struggle. I'll tell you something. I think Anne Marie and maybe some others have alluded to this. We're implementing these things at our school right now with high school students. There is some severe pushback from students.
Yeah.
I mean, outright, I've had students who have just said, my calling is not about others. I had a student the other day who said, quote, I don't know what service has to do with my calling. Wow. I'm not angry at them, but this is what our culture and our church culture has produced, is a me-focused, to whom much has been given, you will be very successful. And go make yourself comfortable. Jesus, arguably, had the greatest impartation of the Spirit, to whom much has been given, and he gave it all. It was all required of him. Everything. And we have the same calling. So that's why I'm so enthusiastic, and I think that's why I'm just so excited to get into this stuff, because it is, we are excited to have things called forth from us. You know, like when the angel visits, visits Gideon and says, "Oh, mighty man of valor," and he's hiding in a cave. And Gideon's like, "You talking to me?" "I'm not a mighty." He says, "You can be if you let God move through you for the sake of your people who need to be delivered right now." Right? So that, obviously, I'm very excited about this. And you should be too.
Although we also have the advantage of kind of knowing where all this is going and how it's going to tie together. So,
quick announcement before we close.
Yeah, sure.
We decided, as typically each year, we're not going to have Sunday school on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve day. So we usually take that week between New Year's and Christmas and not have Sunday school. So we're just having one service on Christmas Eve at 6 that Sunday, and then the following week we'll not have Sunday school, but we'll have morning worship on the 31st.
That's good.
I'll mention that upstairs.
We'll be in Michigan, actually. So we'll be here. Why don't I go ahead and just pray and close us out here. Father, I thank you for our time together and just everybody who's gathered here and those who weren't able to make it. I just pray that you would help us as we navigate this curriculum, that we would take from it that which you would want us to and apply in ways that you would desire we would. And just keep us humble and just give us discernment.